Okay, let's get it. It is Locked On LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona, ESPN Radio, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria, CST, and right here for the Locked On LSU podcast. Awards galore for LSU, but we start with some assistant coach news. On Tuesday evening, news started to circulate that Dave Aranda and UNLV were in serious talks for Dave Aranda to become the new head coach of the Runnin' Rebels. And overnight, further news broke that those contract negotiations have apparently broken off. Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, who had been reporting on this story, was a guest on Off the Bench with Jordy Calada and T-Bob Hebert on Wednesday morning. And here's what Bruce said is the absolute latest as of Wednesday morning.
The latest from talking with sources involved in that is that I'm told he will not be the next head coach at UNLV. So they were in conversation. They reported that yesterday and kind of examining everything about the job. And keep in mind, Dave Aranda, as you guys know, is making $2.5 million per year. That's way, way, way more than UNLV pays for a head coach. And so I think there was real interest. But at the end of the day, I'm told he's not gonna be the head coach when UNLV does hire somebody very soon.
So it looks like the UNLV job will not happen for Dave Aranda, although we said the same thing with Greg Schiano at Rutgers, where it looked like that had broken off, and then ultimately it did happen. So until I's are dotted, T's are crossed, and a coach is at a podium, and even sometimes after that, you never really know. But Feldman did elaborate on the fact that this might not be the end of the coaching search and coaching carousel involving Dave Aranda this year.
You know, he's well-respected, no doubt. I think what's three Mountain West jobs that are open right now. I think UNLV is probably the third best of the three. Colorado State, you have Fresno State now that came open last week, and also UNLV. Remember, he's a West Coast guy. I think there's a lot of people who have not just respect for him. They feel like he's a guy that, people will – he will create some buzz. I mean, he's got obviously an understated personality, but his reputation – in the business, I think, is really, really strong. And people look at it and go, well, it's just a matter of time before Dave gets his shot. And, look, a lot of guys, and I think he's in this category, would love to run their own program someday. But the money LSU is paying him right now at 2.5, he would take a massive pay cut to do that at one of these jobs. Now, it's not to say that a year from now, when we expect there probably will be a bigger more action on the coaching carousel at the end of 2020 season, that there probably won't be better jobs out there that probably would be paying more than that. So it's just a matter of timing, I think, at this point.
So let's check through some of the things that we know. And again, that was Bruce Feldman on Off the Bench with Jordy Calada and T-Bob Hebert. You can listen to that entire interview at 1045ESPN.com on demand. Specifically with UNLV, that is a job that some see as potentially on the up. So they just fired Tony Sanchez, and a very quick backstory. Sanchez was the head football coach at Bishop Gorman, the high school there in Las Vegas, one of the powerhouses. The Fertitta brothers of the UFC fame and casino fame in Las Vegas and wealth and fortune. They have been great benefactors to Bishop Gorman and also UNLV, and so they essentially facilitated Sanchez becoming the head coach from high school to UNLV. He bombed out tremendously there and was fired, but Sanchez was only making $600,000 a year. Here's the other side of the job, though. UNLV is set to start playing in the new Las Vegas Raiders stadium, so the venue will be amazing. They've just built, thanks to the Fertittas, a football-only complex, so the facilities are amazing. When you look at Dave Aranda, he is a Southern California guy. He, his wife, his family, they are West Coast people. And I think it's generally been assumed that at some point, Dave's career is going to take him back to the West Coast. He, of course, has spent time at Utah State, at Hawaii, in different spots in Colorado or in California as well. So it wouldn't be tremendously surprising to see Dave Aranda try to move closer to home. Now, the money is interesting. Some of the conversations I've had is that UNLV would not be looking to pay more than $1.3 million for their head coach. So Dave Aranda making 2.5 would take a considerable pay cut if he were to go to a school like UNLV in the Mountain West. That would pay him significantly less. The other thing that's just quite honest is that Dave Aranda is a different cat. Dave and his wife and their family, their kids, have really enjoyed Baton Rouge. I don't think there's any question. But I also don't believe Dave Aranda is singularly motivated by money. And there's also a question as to whether or not, you know, he wanted to be a head coach, but I think this flirtation is telling you that. I think there's a couple of other things probably at play. Personalities absolutely matter, and there have been times where you've seen Ed Orgeron on the sideline displeased with Dave Aranda, and that doesn't really – and through a year where defensively LSU hasn't been to the standard that they normally are, I think Dave has probably also taken a lot of criticism, being that his salary is mentioned every time LSU has a defensive lapse. So in some respects, it's not to say that there's anything frayed or dismayed there, but sometimes situations run their course. And I don't think anyone realistically would have expected that Dave Aranda would be LSU's defensive coordinator forever. I think everyone knows that when someone is that good at their job, they're upwardly mobile and that he's going to move on to something. It's just when might that be and when the right opportunity might come. Now, look, you could very easily look at, you know, Kirby Smart going to Georgia or Jeremy Pruitt going to Tennessee, and you can look at coordinators getting their first head coaching job at a major opportunity, and why might Dave Aranda leave LSU in this opportunity for something in the Mountain West, per se? That's where you just say, okay, Dave, what do you want to do? If being closer to home is what he wants, maybe that's the type of opportunity it takes to get him a head coaching job and he leaves for it. Perhaps that's what it is. I know there's also the concern from LSU fans about LSU entering a playoff run, and could this be a distraction? The thing I'll tell you is that this is not entirely uncommon. I'd say it's probably more common. As programs have success, their coordinators are going to get poached as people try to grab a hold of that success. Kirby Smart left out, you know, was with Alabama through their playoff run. Jeremy Pruitt, who I just mentioned, also was a coordinator at Alabama during a playoff run. Tom Herman took the Houston head coaching job while he was the offensive coordinator at Ohio State during their national championship run in 2014. We could go back to Bo Pelini in 2007, who was LSU's defensive coordinator and became the Nebraska head coach but stayed with LSU through the bowl game. So the coaching carousel is spinning. You heard Bruce mention there are other jobs available in the Mountain West that Dave might be attracted to or a candidate for. We will see in time. I would suspect that Dave Aranda will remain with LSU through their playoff run regardless of what happens. And what we know as of now, it appears anyway, that UNLV will not be the destination for Dave Aranda. Okay, it's Locked On LSU, your team every day. Whether or not Dave Aranda is back next year remains to be seen. We know Joe Brady will be back, and he'll be back with a little hardware in tow. We'll discuss that next. Remember, if you're a Spotify listener, use Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year. Take a screenshot and tag us at Locked On Live and at Matt Moscona or at Locked On LSU on Twitter, and we will share and retweet. Award season continues around college football, and Tuesday, Joe Brady picked up some hardware.
And the 2019 Broyles Award winner is Joe Brady from LSU.
So Joe Brady, LSU passing game coordinator, was the only offensive finalist among the five finalists for the Broyles Award given annually to the nation's top assistant coach. And he wins the award at just 30 years old, becoming the youngest Broyles Award winner in history. But he was very quick to point out during his remarks that he shares this award.
You know, I feel like I'm sharing the stage right now with Steve Ensminger. This name, let's just say Joe Brady / Steve Ensminger. You know, his openness and his humility to be able to, allow me to come in here, a young guy, and be able to, you know, share a vision with him and create an offense with him. It's something that I hope when I'm his age, I'm going to be able to do the same. I've embraced his slinger mentality, and I'm truly grateful for that.
After the award ceremony, Brady spoke to Brooks Kabina of The Advocate, who asked Joe Brady, what are you going to tell Steve Ensminger when you talk to Steve Ensminger?
I'm going to tell him congratulations on the Broyles Award. I'm not kidding when I think that it should just say Steve Ensminger, but if it says Joe Brady, it says / Steve Ensminger next to it. And so, you know, I'm going to congratulate him.
I know it's a story that's been told over and over again, but truly Steve Ensminger's humility to allow Joe Brady to come in and to share ideas to make this offense work has been incredible, especially when you consider the clash that really Matt Canada and Ed Ogeron had, the clash with Les Miles, Cam Cameron, and the rest of the staff at the end of that tenure. And make no mistake, that was a less Cam offense, and other opinions were not really welcomed in that offense. To have something this open has allowed it to blossom the way it has, and Steve Ensminger deserves a tremendous amount of credit for it. And Brady also took time to thank Ed Ogeron.
You know, I want to thank LSU, Coach Ogeron, our players. You know, Coach O took a chance on an assistant to an assistant in the New Orleans Saints. You know, nobody ever heard of my name, and you know, I really liked it that way. I was able to just learn a lot of football and learn from the best, and he took a chance on me. And it means a lot to me, and the passion that Coach O has for, you know, the state of Louisiana and the culture that he has built, you know, I'm truly honored to be able to be a part of it.
When you hear him say it that way, it is striking. An assistant to an assistant. But what a rise for Joe Brady, making, you know, some have estimated, no one said it publicly, the neighborhood of maybe $40,000 a year with the Saints to $410,000 a year in his first year with LSU, now staring at a new contract that surely will exceed $1 million annually. And he's being honored as the nation's top assistant coach. What a ride it's been. But, of course, wouldn't be without his players, who Brady took time to thank also.
My players, you know, like they always say, you know, we're only good coaches when we have good players. And right now I'm coaching some amazing players. And, you know, having the ability of a guy like Joe Burrow and, you know, some of the, you know, I have a couple receivers and running backs that are going to be up for some of these awards. And they make us look good, make us look a lot better than we really are. And, you know, I'm just truly fortunate to be able to coach such a great group of men that just have such a passion for football and just love being coached hard.
So Joe Brady takes home the Broyles Award. We also found out that LSU's offensive line selected as one of the four finalists for the Joe Moore Award. That's given annually to the nation's top offensive line as a unit. It's LSU, Ohio State, Alabama, and Oregon were those that were recognized as the finalists for the Joe Moore Award. Ed Ogeron has been named a finalist for the Eddie Robinson National Coach of the Year Award also. And we also learned, however, that Clyde Edwards-Helaire came up just short in the Hornig Award. I was a little surprised by this one. Lynn Bowden of Kentucky ended up winning the award. And listen, the Hornig Award goes to the nation's most versatile player, and Odell Beckham won this award back in 2013. And I thought Clyde Edwards-Helaire had a spectacular opportunity to win this award, considering how much he emerged on the grand stage. But it is certainly also worth noting with Lynn Bowden. This is a guy who at Kentucky was a receiver, and when they had injury issues at quarterback, Bowden took over at quarterback and got them to a bowl game. So a fantastic season for Lynn Bowden, certainly well-deserved. I was pulling for Clyde Edwards-Helaire and thought his performance on the biggest stages this season might have allowed him to take home the award. But Lynn Bowden of Kentucky wins the Hornig Award, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire comes up just short. Tomorrow, Thursday, is the College Football Award Show in Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame, and that's where we will find out the winners of the Thorpe. Of course, Grant Delpit's up for that. The Biletnikoff, Jamar Chase, up for that. The Davey O'Brien and the Maxwell Awards, which Joe Burrow is up for. So we'll find out if LSU's taking home a lot more hardware on Thursday at the College Football Awards Show in Atlanta. A guy who knows a lot about winning big games at LSU is Rohan Davey. He gave a few quick thoughts on LSU's matchup with Oklahoma in the Peach Bowl. You'll hear that next. Locked on LSU, your team every day. Wrapping up a Wednesday edition of the Locked on LSU podcast, your team every day. If you've not done so yet, please subscribe to the podcast. No matter what podcast app you listen, if you could subscribe, rate us on iTunes. We'd appreciate that very, very much. Rohan Davey visits with us every week, and we talked to the former LSU quarterback about this matchup with Oklahoma and started with sort of some of the concern maybe that LSU fans have considering how Plumlee, the quarterback from Ole Miss, was able to run against LSU so effectively. Now here comes Jalen, who can run the ball effectively with a 1,300-yard season rushing the football. And we started this conversation with Roe previewing the Peach Bowl there with Jalen running the football.
You got to understand the Ole Miss and the Ole Miss quarterback and what Jalen brings is a little different. Ole Miss quarterback wasn't throwing the football at all. You know, when he came out, it was assignment football. So Jalen Hurts presents a whole different dynamic, because if he comes down the line and you think that he's going to run it, he could back up and now throw it, you know, 50 yards down the field or whatever it may be. So we have to account for him throwing the football as well as running the football. And but man, like we talked about against in the Ole Miss game, that was guys not fitting. That was all things that could be fixed, you know. And for me, Lamb's going to be a problem, of course. I mean, we have great cornerback with Derek and Fulton, but the guy's going to be a problem. I'm sure that if he's lined up on Stingley or Fulton, they're not going to be scared to throw it to him or throw it at him. You know, so you have to account for they have a big play wide receiver. They have another wide receiver on the other side. They have a pretty good tight end that they try to work in a mix. So for us, defensively, it's the same, almost the same rules as Ole Miss when he is in running situations. We knew when Ole Miss was in running situations where we had to fit and where we had to come up to, but we never did it. So when this guy comes out, we have to know tendencies and know that, okay, if this certain package is in the backfield, it's a running play. If Jalen Hurts lines up on the left hash and he goes into he runs the play into the short corner, then it's a running play, whatever that tendency may be. So that's what Coach Aranda, those defensive guys are working on now until then, is just trying to catch what do they do on first down? What do they do on second down? If it's backed up and it's second and long, what do they do? What are their second and long play? And just try to hone in on those little tendencies that they do that do show.
Am I oversimplifying it saying, man, Baylor held this team to 23 points in regulation. They scored a touchdown in overtime at 30. But like, if Baylor can hold them to 23, can't LSU with 3 weeks to prepare do the same thing? And I know ain't nobody holding LSU that low. Oklahoma's not holding them to 20. Like, Oklahoma's not holding LSU to 30 in this game.
No. You know, it's all on. Now, and you bring up a good point, because now you have that time off and coaches can get inside them heads a little bit and try to put in too much or do too much because it's a new opponent, because of the situation, because it's, you know, the first round of the playoffs or whatever it may be. But I would expect our defense to play well against Oklahoma and Jalen Hurts. I would expect Dave Aranda to have a package in place based on the quarterbacks that we have seen and the problems that we have had, to have these guys healthy, to have these guys in tune, okay, do your job. And it's as simple as that for against Oklahoma, just do your job. Because I'm sure we're going to at some point or another start out man-to-man like we do and see if we could contain. Because we always start out that way and then see where it goes. If we can contain, if we can get home with just rushing those guys. But, you know, you're going to see, can I go man-to-man against Lamb? Can I put one of my top guys on him and contain him? Now, if he goes off for a couple, now you might see a double team. Now, that takes seven out the box. Now, you might have to keep him in the secondary because we're having problems out on the flank. So, it's so much early in that game that's going to determine what we do defensively. Are we getting pressure on him? Are we containing him when he runs? And that's the other thing. It may not be a get a pressure on Jalen Hurts game. It may be, you know what, rush into eye level until you see him, but don't let him break contain. Let's keep him in that pocket.
That's what they did with Manziel all those years. They just made a little teacup around him and they said, you're just not getting out of here.
Yeah.
You can say, look, you can go ahead and try to throw it. Try to find an open guy, but we're just not letting you run.
And I think that'd be a wonderful approach. You know what I mean? I think that's the right approach, because you want him to be a pocket passer. You don't want, especially escaping to his right. You don't want him escaping to his right. If you do, you want to force everything to his left. Let him force everything to his left and get out on his left side.
So according to Vegas, you look at the spread, they're looking at like a 45-31 type game.
Vegas be knowing, boy.
Does that sound about right?
That sound about right. For a Georgia game, I predicted the score to be 45-27. I think that's what I predicted.
You a little high?
Yeah, I was a little high. I gave Georgia more credit.
So look, I nailed LSU. I said 37-23 was my final. So I nailed LSU's point total. I gave Georgia's offense
way too much credit.
Yeah,
I gave them too much. I gave them way too much damn credit.
They sucked, man. That offense was bad. LSU handled them. I mean, but boy.
Let me tell you, the defense, and this is the other thing that's going on right now. Defense is slowly rounding.
Yeah.
And I know it's the second week, and I always like to see three, but I don't give a damn about the three. Three is in 3 weeks or whenever we play. But the defense is rounding the form, man. It looks like the defensive line is getting healthy. Those guys look like they're literally, like, actually getting healthy. You know, before, Matt, when you see them guys, when they make a play or whatever, you're coming out of the field, somebody's limping, even though, you know, they weren't carted off. Somebody was limping, or you see somebody go over and they tire, or you see somebody holding something. That Georgia game, man, I don't know if it was adrenaline, but all those guys look healthy. All those guys look fresh. They look like they're coming back. You know what I mean? Like they hitting their stride for the second half of the season. And that's one of the things that I wanted to see. I wanted to see how these guys coming back from injuries, the Logan, the Shelvin, how these guys was going to come back and play well. So I'm definitely, by the way the defense played and how they held Georgia together, I don't get it twisted. Georgia was a conventional, sucky offense. You know what I mean? They were conventional, and I think anytime you play a conventional team like that where they're just running the ball, play action, and dropping back, you should be able to handle that. Hurst is a little bit more, a lot more dynamic. So we'll have a little bit more problems there, but great job on defense.
We spend a full hour chatting with Rohan Davey every week. If you want to check out that conversation, you can do so online at 1045ESPN.com. Click On Demand after further review, and you'll see it right there. Or however you listen to this podcast, just search 1045 ESPN Baton Rouge. Until tomorrow, Locked On LSU, your team every day.